I've been watching hockey since as long as I can remember, since I was, you know, a little wee guy.
Your home for hockey talk in the Twin Cities.
I've been watching hockey all through the 70s and 80s. I mean, that's all I did.
On the Ice, hosted by Pete Wagner and Chad Graff.
You know, even before my parents deserted me, we used to watch hockey together.
We'll cover Wild, Gophers, Prep, and any puck topics you want to talk about.
Yes, I did want to play in the NHL my whole life. And, you know, I thought if I ever was able to, you know, pay the registration to get into real minor hockey, I think I might have got, you know, I believe I might have went to the show.
Hockey Talk on the Ticket right now. On the Ice on Minnesota's Sports Radio. 105 The Ticket.
Kids, never do this. This is one of the most dangerous things in hockey. You poke the bear. You poke the bear.
He's right. Able to step ahead with it now. And show what he scores! Taves trying to play it in front. Little four by Schultz. He scores! Save property. To Parise. Fans want to see somebody shoot. Spurgeon does. And they score! A power play goal! Across for a shot. Oh, and it went wide. Niederreiter. He scores! Down the ladder to the back again. Suter across. Drive! Getting a piece of it. Crawford! Fired back around. Coy, who took that shot. He's got it again. Three to go. Back to Suter. Shot! Went wide! The horn! And the series is over.
And the season. Good morning. The eulogy begins here for the Minnesota Wild. This is the final On the Ice radio show with a very sharp-dressed Chad Graff in-house going to graduation at the University of Minnesota.
I am. It's a big day. I would have been in Chicago today for Game 5.
You're really lucky you're here.
But here
you
I am.
You want some major points.
Yeah, I know. This is the girlfriend's graduation today, so the Wild win the first-round series, and that's when I have to sit down and say, well, just so you know, it's looking like I'm not going to be able to be at your graduation. Game 5 is today in Chicago. It's the same day as your graduation. She kind of puts two and two together. Well, what if one team just wins in four games? Like, a team is not going to get swept, the Wild or the Blackhawks. These are two good teams.
Everybody's
nobody's getting
this
swept.
A seven-game series.
I picked seven games, and I was very wrong.
And she's very happy. So what's that? She's got a PhD, you said, right?
Master's,
in biology.
Yes, education biology.
Wow. So it comes to an end right here. It's weird because our studios are obviously right around the campuses of the University of Minnesota.
Right.
And it's you can tell it's kind of over for a couple months anyway.
The weather's getting warmer. I mean, we started this back in October. We've done it from trucks. We've done it in heat from the phone in my hotel room.
Some bizarre location. So here we are. You know, and the thing was, is I think if you would have tested us and asked us back in January if we'd be on in May talking hockey in the Wild in a playoff run, I don't think there's an ice cube chance. I would have said yes.
I would have laughed at you.
Yeah, I think we were both there. And I think I remember specifically in the final 39 games, in order to get to the magical 95-point kind of playoff Mendoza line there, they would have had to go on 25-13-1, which to me was insane pace, and they did better than that.
It was an insane pace considering where they were. Go back to January for a minute. They lost. They got blown out in Pittsburgh. They've lost six games in a row. Darcy Kemper's hurt. Nicholas Backstrom just got shelled. That turned out to be the last game that he played. It was just a horrendous game. And that was the eye-opener of, okay, we can't even put this off for any amount of time. And had the Wild, you know, so then they acquired Devin Dubnyk, and of course everything turns around. We all know the story after that. But had Devin Dubnyk not turned things around the way that he had, the Wild were not too far off from selling pieces. And it would have been a slow grind to the finish.
We were talking buyers and sellers at that point. So we're going to get into the good, the bad, and the ugly of the 2014-15 season. But first, the task at hand. I know it's 2 days removed. I know a lot of people have seen the series. It's been discussed a bit. But I think it's only prudent that this program take it to finish this out and talk a little bit about the series and the final games and hear from a couple of the interested parties. But I want to start with this one, cut one, an audio for Mike Yeo in the postgame, talking about this being another learning experience for the Wild.
I think that's maybe, and there's a lot to learn from this, but maybe that's part of what I think maybe we went in with too many, I don't know, I want to say expectations or too many, you know, we have to learn from it. You know, all the talk, this is our year, things are going to be different, everything else. And instead of just staying in the process a little bit more, that led to a lot of the frustration, a lot of the, you know, getting away from our game a little bit. Again, that's a team, first off, they played great. I'm not surprised that they played great. They've won 8 of their last 9 playoff series, and it took the one team to beat them 7 games to beat them. So for you to beat them, you have to be on top of it, and it's going to be hard. And learning experience, that's for sure.
A lot of major nuggets in there. First of all, yes, he is correct. The Chicago Blackhawks. I know NBC Sports Network was comparing them to the runs of the Edmonton Oilers and the Islanders from the 80s and, late 80s and early 90s for the Islanders, or the Oilers rather. So I do appreciate that that's an incredible hockey team that has to be handled. But the learning experience thing for me is, as you tweeted out, and I think it was very apropos, how many times do you need to learn before it sinks in?
Yeah, at the end of the season, usually, I would like to, and I'm sure the other beat writer would like to, be at the end of season press conference. But with the 8:30 starts, which we've talked about how ridiculous those are, I wasn't able to go to Mike Yeo's press conference at the end of the season.
You guys couldn't set the agenda. I mean, it's you two and then the rest.
I couldn't get down there, unfortunately, because of deadline. So I'm listening upstairs. I'm writing my story. And right when I heard him say learning experience, I mean, maybe it is a learning experience, but that's got to be so frustrating for fans to hear that you're now, this is the fourth year in a row and maybe more that you've heard learning experiences. Four seasons ago, it was after the collapse, after, being the number one team. Three seasons ago, they make the playoffs for the first time in 5 years and are ousted. And hey, we learned about the playoffs, and true. They did. Then they come back, they win a playoff series and lose in the second round. And that was the learning experience that I think should have really meant a lot this season, and for whatever reason it didn't, and now they've got another learning experience, and maybe these are all valid and maybe they'll lead to something special, but it's got to be frustrating for fans to hear learning experience year after year.
It's the same thing as the Timberwolves saying be patient. Now they've pulled off of that a little bit in their verbiage and their marketing ploy, because they realize you can only say be patient for 12 years so long, and at some point that falls on deaf ears. And I think this is getting close, perilously close to that same situation. But the bigger thing that stood out to me in there within that soundbite was the notion that all the talk of being special, I mean, talk is cheap. Action is what pays the bills. And why was there no action? Why did it seem like we heard quite often, we got ahead of ourselves? We didn't really. I mean, that to me is the big. I've been just harping on that all year. How can they not be ready? How can this be, while we're fragile or whatever? I don't get it. As pro athletes and a pro team that's as good as they are, I've called them a great team, top eight team, but not an elite team. How is it that you cannot be ready for what you know that's coming? I don't understand it.
I don't understand that, but I mean, this was a series that the Wild never once held a lead in. They were only tied for 58 minutes. This is a series that only lasted 240 minutes. The Wild were trailing for all but 58 of those minutes, and that includes the time that it was tied 0-0. I mean, every single game they came out, maybe they'd play well for 5 or 10 minutes in games 3 and 4, and then, inevitably Chicago would have a rush chance or two, and that would go in, and all of a sudden the Wild are losing 1-0, and they played so poorly trailing. And Chicago, to their credit, is a very good team that recognized that they had a good goalie and that they could counter the Wild, so they would sort of pack it in a little bit. But you have to find a way to, if that's the case, either A, just not try. I mean, you got to bury a chance at some point. They scored 7 goals. You got to score. That was, and we'll get into all of this. And Devan Dubnyk has received a lot of criticism for his playoff series. And he played a role in some of those goals.
I don't really know how, though. I mean, right? I mean, he made some massive saves in Game 3.
To win the series, he needed to have the 1.7 goals against average. Right. And so I think he took a slight step back in the playoffs, but he was not the reason that they got swept. The reason they got swept was because they could not score and seemingly could not skate with the Chicago Blackhawks.
To take that a step further, why then are they ready for the St. Louis Blues, but it doesn't translate into this next series? Let's take cut two.
Like I said, it's a learning experience, and certainly we felt good about the game that we were playing, felt good about the way things went in the first round, and probably needed to kind of take a little step back and realize that the next one, it's not just going to carry over into that. Seemed to have a tough time adjusting, and what it came down to too, we were chasing every game. They scored, it's an incredible stat. We never had the lead in this series.
I don't blame them. If you've never led in a series and really you're chasing games like they're going out of style, and the irony is they were close games and the Hawks didn't care how close they were because they were so defensively dedicated and sound. Their goaltender found his game and just got better and better and better. But the thing that stands out to me is you knew what you were getting. I said this last comment. You knew what you were getting and you knew what to expect. The only difference was the Hawks were better this year than they were last year. That's a very good team. And, boy, I say cup worthy at this stage.
Just yeah, the way, absolutely.
I mean, really scary. But then Minnesota, you know, was great against St. Louis, but not nearly as good as they were against the Hawks last year. That, to me, is the cause for concern. Now, not Armageddon. I mean, still, I'm saying it's a great team. But to get past that, I think there's – it's going to – you know, I mean, short of being terrible for 5 years to get,
right,
you know, jackpot lottery-type picks that work out, I don't know what you're going to do other than just outweigh the Hawks and these guys to get old. I'm serious.
I'm with you. This, to me, is why there's less optimism after this season. Even after the remarkable turnaround, even after ousting the St. Louis Blues in six games, to me there's less optimism going forward than there was at the end of last year. Their five highest paid players are all 30 or over. There's only one other team in the NHL that way, and that's the Detroit Red Wings. Just the way that they have built, I think they need to take a look at that. I mean, all of this has been through free agency or trades for a guy like Jason Pominville. And the young guys are basically going to dictate what happens going forward. A lot of what, you know, next season is determined on guys like Jason Zucker. Is he going to become a 30-goal scorer? Nino Niederreiter, is he going to become
a
30-goal scorer? After his good series, you know, early against St. Louis, he kind of disappeared a little bit. A lot of this, and this is why I don't think there's the optimism, is yes, Devan Dubnyk was outstanding and Vezina worthy and even
MVP.
Possibly Hart worthy.
Yep.
But you can't expect Devan Dubnyk until you prove it year after year that you're a guy like Carey Price or Lundqvist. It's reasonable to expect that he's not going to be putting up a 1.78 goals against average. So there's going to be a little bit of a regression.
But the one thing on the goaltenders is they tend to come on later in their careers.
Yeah, absolutely.
It usually takes them till 4 or 5 years into this league until they really find their rhythm, and then they have their great times between the age 28 and 34, let's say.
I think
he's there personally.
Yeah, I think he's going to be fine. The Wild are going to re-sign him.
And
Devan Dubnyk wants to re-sign here. I know that it's very worrisome for
a
lot
house.
Of people. Zach Parise's old place. It's worrisome for a lot of people whether, you know, a team could come in and swoop in and throw him tons of money that he can't say no to. But I think that the Wild are going to get this deal done before July 1st, before other teams can negotiate with him. And Devan Dubnyk, look, he played for three teams last year. He saw, you know, what happens if you're not in the right situation. And for him, I think, especially as a goalie, so much of your success is predicated around your situation, the guys in front of you, how they're playing. And he loves the guys on the Wild and the way that they play in front of him and are committed in the defensive zone. So Devan Dubnyk wants to stay. The Wild want him to stay. They'll find something and they'll get it done.
We're going to continue through this discussion here into the second segment as we will talk more about, you know, another big storyline, Chad, was their big guys produced, the Wild big guys didn't. I don't really get that carried away on that because I think the playoffs are really about all your guys producing. And you really need your third and fourth liners to step up. And it's always guys like Shaw who scored a big goal that make a difference in these series too as well. So I don't think it's really fair to start, you know, sniping at the big guys. Although, you know, one of the things, and we'll hear from Thomas Vanek, was I appreciated his ownership in saying I didn't get it done.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was no finger pointing. He tried to get sucked into talking about other guys. He refused to do that. I thought that was awesome. So a classy move there and a true professional in that perspective. We'll be back with more. Tom Chorsky at the bottom of the hour. He'll be in studio with us as Chad makes the run over to Northrop.
I'll be over there. You're right.
Yes, for the graduation. We'll be back right after this. David Helmer,
Hi.
Mr. Producer Man, how are you?
I'm okay.
You know, I got to tell everybody, this guy works tirelessly to make this show happen. I will fire all of these sound bites for On the Ice Radio to him. Oh, by the way, and then On Deck Radio as well. And he puts together all the montages. He's here. He's a grinder. And it's kind of like, you know, he's sort of like the catcher. He puts the tools on every day. He's in on every pitch. He gets the job done. And I just have to say thank you for everything you've done on this show.
Yeah, no problem. I like to think of myself more of like a Denny Hocking or Nick Punto.
Oh, you want to be the utility guy. All right. But I see the guy that's willing to take the foul tip off the mitt, off the hand.
Well, I do that,
the bare
too.
Hand.
I kind of see a little Justin
Fontaine.
By the Fontaine.
Way, can I go there for a second? I don't know. Why does it bug me that the white polish on Suzuki's hands for when he hangs the signs?
Fancy.
It just bugs me. I think we're getting too carried away. Just dangle the fingers. Let's go. Anyway, back to the hockey scene. So obviously, we're just sort of talking about the Wild here. Obviously, you know, Chad, what kind of questions and feelings are you getting from fans? Is it disappointment, frustration? It's okay. Optimism, guarded optimism. What would you say the overall tone is from what you felt from fans?
It's been more of those first couple emotions you mentioned.
Negative.
And less of the optimism. Fans are disappointed and rightfully so. I think it would have been one thing, and I know that it still would have been frustrating to lose to Chicago for a third straight year, but if they at least, like last year, show that they were right there, that they were with them, that it was close, that the top guys played better, that Vanek played better, that the young guys, showed that they're able to put a little more on their shoulders. If Nino Niederreiter produced a little more, if Jason Zucker produced a little more, there would have been a lot more optimism going into last season. But when you get swept, I mean, the last time the Wild held a lead was in their first round series. It's just
a couple weeks ago
in April. It's just frustrating for fans for the way the season ended. A loss to the Blackhawks is never something that, is really going to alter.
I mean, you don't sense they're turning on this team, do you?
No, I think that they realize that there's going to need to be some really savvy, crafty moves in the offseason by Chuck Fletcher for this team to get better. The way that the roster is constructed, it's going to be tough for this team to get much better.
You can't buy a legitimate goal scorer. You really can't.
That's what we keep seeing.
That'll be harder to trade for. Exactly. It'd be harder to trade for. And so then you look at teams like Chicago. Where do they get guys like this? And, I think, who I compare the Wild to a lot is the Detroit Red Wings right now. Really good hockey teams, and they can beat anybody at any time on a night. But when you get into a situation against the Hawks, and, when Tom Chorsky gets in here in 10 minutes, I can't wait to hear if he thinks we're being Armageddon or if he doesn't disagree with that. But there's a lot of teams that fall into that category. There's Steven Stamkos.
Right.
There are only so many of those guys out there, and how do you get them before they're 30?
It's good admirable luck. What the Wild have done and what the Red Wings have done by not bottoming out to have, a little bit of consistent playoff appearances and success. And I know that the Blackhawks have been in the playoffs a lot more and have had a lot more success than the Wild. But in terms of, both of these teams not bottoming out, it's admirable in a sense. But on the other hand, it's almost necessary in this league if you're going to win a Stanley Cup. You look at the teams that have won a Stanley Cup, they've all had top five draft picks. When was the last time the Wild picked in the top five? Was it Benoit Pouliot? And you just see the difference.
Yeah, I know what team he's on right now.
I don't even know what team he's on right now.
Team first-round pick, Edmonton Oilers.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They're just all first-rounders. But it doesn't mean if you're a first-rounder in the top five that you're going to hit the jackpot with that guy. Connor McDavid, we're sure he's going to be the next best thing. But it's never a guarantee either. You've got to have a lot of luck with this stuff, too.
Well, and the Wild are, again, picking later in the first round. And you just look at the difference that a top-10 pick makes. Matt Dumba was, their highest pick in years. And he's been
really good.
He had a breakout year. And I think he is one of the few reasons, if you're going to be optimistic about next season, he's one of the few reasons. And I think he is a reason why Jared Spurgeon could get traded. We'll get into that. But Jonas Brodin was another, pick that, and as you fall later in the first round, naturally, it's less of a sure thing. So that's the other issue. But you know, I think that we could see some trades as we mentioned. I think that that's part of how
everybody likes that.
Yeah, everybody loves trade talk. And that's how Chuck Fletcher is going to have to get this team better. There's a guy like Matt Cook on the roster who's got a cap hit of $2.5 million. And realistically, what he produces on the ice is probably not $2.5 million.
Injury riddled. And it's, you know, it's not your fault when you're hurt. But, I mean, let's be honest. He was out of the lineup with surgeries and injuries that I think befell a player that's in his mid-30s.
And, look, I think that there are teams that would like to have Matt Cook on their team even for that cap hit. I think that you sort of pitch it if you're Chuck Fletcher and you want to make that move. Matt Cook brings a lot of leadership. He's won a Stanley Cup. He's been to a lot of playoff games. I think that he was good for the Wild. His first season here this year was tough for him with the injuries. Jared Spurgeon's another guy that, you know, I know that all of these players that we're throwing out there have been important for the Wild and have done good things for the Wild. But when you take a step back and you're Chuck Fletcher, and they're going to take a few weeks to sort of decompress before they really analyze everything that's gone wrong and then make their moves in late June. But Jared Spurgeon's another guy. You look at the Wild's defense. Three of their top four defensemen are locked up long term. Ryan Suter's not going anywhere. Jonas Brodin's not going anywhere. Marco Scandella's not going anywhere. So then, you know, you've got one leftover spot in your top four defensemen. That was Jared Spurgeon this season. He's under contract for one more year at $2.6 million.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a spot that do you want to give Matt Dumba room to grow? I think personally that Matt Dumba showed enough this season to warrant a top four spot next season. Do you want five top four defensemen on your roster? Maybe you do. The Wild are a defensive-centric team, but in order for Matt Dumba to fully blossom, he needs a top four spot, so maybe you look at, and Jared Spurgeon's been great for the Wild, underrated in my opinion.
Phenomenal
in a lot of ways.
On the power play. The number two unit was better than the number one. It was a joke.
Him and Dumba on the power play were
so
much better.
I was so frustrated. They throw out that first unit, so-called first unit. They could not gain zone entry. They're ringing the wall. Who does that? I mean, you know, they could not gain possession off the rush, right?
And just to show you how much
that second unit would come on, Chad, with 48 seconds left, and they'd generate more chances in their 30 seconds of zone time than the other group would for the first minute 15. It was frustrating beyond belief.
With Spurgeon and Dumba on the
point. Put them out first.
Yeah.
Or do you have to worry about egos?
Well, no,
know.
And then all of a sudden, game four with elimination on the line, that's finally when Yo makes a bunch of changes to the power play. Dumba goes to the top unit. Scandella, who was terrific earlier in the year offensively, who fans wanted to see on the power play for so long, and it probably should have been on the power play, but this just goes to show you how much went wrong in the Chicago series. Over and over, Mike Yeo says, I'm not putting Marco Scandella on the top on any power play.
He's got a bomb.
Because we want him rested in case there's a penalty kill right after the power play. We want to put him and Brodin out there and know that we have two very good defensemen coming up after the power play so teams can't attack us. Over and over and
what
over.
What am I doing right now?
You're rolling your eyes.
I'm raising my eyebrow hard, yeah. I don't get that. But okay.
So, I mean, okay, it worked out well for the Wild for a lot of the season after the power play. They were very good. They never gave up goals right after the power play. But to show you everything that goes wrong, he puts Scandella on the power play. The Wild power play ends. Jonathan Toews draws a Chicago power play. So all of a sudden, the Wild are sent on the penalty kill. And now Marco Scandella's tired, so he can't go out there. So Brodin goes out there with Nate Prosser on the penalty kill.
They score.
And they score right after that. The puck's under Prosser. I mean,
now I can't throw my eyebrow because I'm wrong and he's right. And that's why I sit here and he's there.
But that's why I say how much went wrong in this series, because over and over he says not to do this. He does it, and look what happens.
Let's go to cut three with Mike Yeo talking about those big guys not producing.
I don't think that. I mean, certainly they're big guys. I mean, they've got guys that are a little bit different than our guys. That's one thing. And we've got guys that do tremendous things for us too. We might not have a guy who's going to get 100 points a year for us right now, but we have guys who are going to contribute offensively, but they play the game a certain way, and that allows us to be successful as a team. And right now we're a good team, and we have to find a way to be, we have to find a way to be the best team. And that's not an easy thing to do.
They're different players indeed, and there's nothing wrong with that. They're just not the type of players Chicago has. So that's where it comes back to me. It's more of a sum of the whole with the Minnesota Wild as far as who was scoring. Nobody was scoring.
Well, no, nobody was scoring, and that's the problem. And I know that, you know, Yo doesn't want to put a lot of this on the top guys, but it's become a trend now, 3 years in a row, that the Wild's top guys haven't produced. And yes, in the playoffs, you need a lot of different players. They needed a lot more from a lot of different guys, including Coyle, Zucker, Niederreiter, Howa. The list goes, I mean, any one of the forwards, you can basically pick, you can shut your eyes and point to one of a guy that needed more. But when it's become a trend 3 years in a row against Chicago, here are the stats for the last 3 years. Mikko Koivu, 15 games, 0 goals, 3 assists, minus 13. Zach Parise, 15 games, 3 goals, 4 assists, minus 13.
Who are they going against?
Well, they're going against the top guys, but that's the problem.
But that's the problem. You got your top line against their top line. You know, back in the day, it would be the, quote, checking line that would go out, and, you know, your third line would be shutting them down with a two-way center. But now you've got a top line matching up with their top line, and that's trendy in the league today. But when their top line's better than yours, skill-wise, you're in trouble.
Well, it just shows the talent gap.
That's what that says.
It shows the talent, the top-end talent gap between these two teams, and that's been the difference the last 3 years in a row in the playoffs. That's been the difference.
Different types of players. Can we go to Thomas Vanek here taking ownership for his lack of goal scoring prowess in the playoffs?
Can't look back in the series, but if you do, again, game one, I thought we came back, we probably could have had it, but yeah, they're tight games, and you know, their scorers, you know, they scored, but when they needed two timely goals, and I didn't, and then yeah, I think that's really the difference, is the timely scoring.
You know, he said straight up, I didn't. And, you know, you could feel it. You could see it. He seems like a pretty in touch person from what I can tell in that regard. And you could tell it was weighing on him. He was brought in here to be their goal scorer. He's the guy that you buy to bring in here who's what, fifth in the league in goals scored since 2005 and, you know, tops in the power play or whatever it is. And he did have a nice run from January to the end of the regular season. Didn't do too well in Montreal, and they were absolutely beside themselves with the lack of production. Same thing carries over to this year, so what gives?
Well, this is what has eluded the Wild for so long, is this lack of a goal scorer. They tried to find it with Devin Setoguchi. They tried to find it with Danny Heatley. They've tried to find it with Jason Pominville and Thomas Vanek, and they're hoping the trade for Nino Niederreiter, that he may become that type of player. But right now, that they just don't have that pure goal scorer. Even Thomas Vanek this year was more of a playmaker than he was a goal scorer. And you could tell all season that this weighed on him. He knew the contract he signed. He knew how important it was. From day one, you could tell how much this meant to him. I remember his first game, I was talking to Craig Leopold, the owner, and he was talking about how Thomas Vanek was sitting in the locker room by himself hours before the game with the jersey right next to him, just sitting there and thinking about this game. And you could just tell right from the beginning how much this weighed on Thomas Vanek. And truthfully, it probably was a tough season for him.
It was. In all, there's on ice, off ice, and a lot of other things that were an issue there, no doubt. So are you pulling the pin here and going over to Northrop? Are you going to join us on the phone, or are you going to stay for one more?
I'll join you on the phone.
Okay, you can high-five Tom Chorsky in the parking lot, who's dealing with some sort of bridge issue on 15th. Did you guys see that?
Yes. I.
What was that?
Some sort of car accident. It was involving a big truck. I think a truck tried to get under the bridge.
And you know what? It says 12 feet 6 inches or whatever it is. Your truck is 13.6. You're not going to squeeze it under there.
It's not
a sponge, buddy. Thanks a lot. We'll be back with more On the Ice Radio right after this. Welcome back to the On the Ice Radio Show. Chad Graff is exiting the studio. Exit stage left. Kind of like what they referred to, you know, Mike Milbury's comment. I love the song, by the way. Classic Donny Iris, circa 1982. Did you know that, David?
I did not, because like most people of this generation, anything that happened before I was born didn't happen.
What's wrong with you people?
I have no idea.
History doesn't mean a word. Oh, because your generation makes history.
I guess.
And all I have to do is look around the world that's been created. Thank you very much.
No problem.
But anyway, you know, one of the things that you know, we were talking about with Chad was, you know, where do you go with this team? And, you know, it's like I say, I'm looking at this roster and the payroll and, you know, going into the 2015-16 season, they're $9 million of cap space available right now. And you know, we're assuming there's going to be a Nicklas Backstrom buyout, which will free up some money there. Right now, he's due $3.4 million for this upcoming season. And you know, who knows who could be traded, if traded at all. And you know, I think a lot of what's, well, the one thing is the draft is going to be interesting to see what happens if the Wild try to position for draft picks and things like that. But before we get any further into that, Ryan Suter talked about losing to the Blackhawks and for the third time in a row, and what it really means as far as having to look in the mirror.
They're a good team. They have a lot of good players that have won, and they have a lot of confidence. And, you know, for us, we're trying to figure it out. But I think you're on with both of them. I think we have to look at ourselves in the mirror. And but we have a lot of good parts here.
That's a lot of what the theme's been. There's been a lot of good parts on this team, but will it ever, Tom Chorsky, welcome aboard in studio? That was a tow truck that was wedged under that bridge, by the way.
I know. That threw me off for a little bit. Got a funny story about that before we go on. So you tell me to go around, which I did,
yeah.
And then you're coming back off of Como, and I get to the stoplight, and in front of me is barricades.
Oh, geez.
And yellow tape and a police car, truck,
yeah,
parked sideways, lights on, everything.
Yeah.
And I'm waiting for the light to turn green so I can turn left to come here. And there's a woman who's crossing the road, and she's there from Metro Transit, and she's tells me to roll down my window, and she says, "You can't go straight here." Thanks, Tips.
Did you appreciate that?
Thanks, Scoops.
Did you say, "Oh, thanks, I didn't see that.
I didn't notice.
I had no idea." Well, yeah, you know, so that tape that you see when you come to that bridge, it looks like it's, you know, it's like, oh, now what am I going to do? But it's right before Rollins here where the studios are. So, yeah, it was a little bit of a curveball trying to squeeze the tow truck with, I think, another truck underneath the
underneath
bridge.
Underneath it. It's one of those things you see on YouTube there. It gets stuck under the bridge.
Exactly, and they got the trains rolling there and everything. So, welcome aboard in studio here for the next two segments. Thanks for coming down.
Great to be here. This is cool.
It's a fun vibe in here. So, Chad Graff will be on the phone line, too. He's headed off to the University of Minnesota, your alma mater.
Yeah.
For his girlfriend's grad.
Yeah, we're on campus here. I just drove past some of my old teammates. Johnny, don't call him Vita Blue.
Absolutely.
He lived right down the road here.
Johnny Vita Blue. Remember him?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man. Wow, those were the glory days.
Absolutely. Snuggerud and Richards lived over on this side of town.
Did it bring back the memories?
Yeah, a little bit. I stayed on the other side of campus for the most part, but
you know,
could
what's
sneak
weird
over
about
here a
this
bit.
Campus, though, and I, you know, now my son's down here and all those guys, and it's like, you don't know how good the housing situation is here. I mean, look at all these apartments that have popped up. They're gorgeous.
And oh, yeah.
There's plenty of them.
It's a lot better now.
If you had a mold issue, no matter where you moved in, it was going to be a rough 9 months.
Yeah, I mean, there was one house when I arrived as a freshman in 1989. That's going back for some of you kids probably. But
yeah.
It was called the Animal House.
Perfect.
And there were some guys like Wally Chapman, and I think Pat Micheletti maybe lived in there. And there was a night where we went over to gather. I don't know. I think it was maybe after the season. And it was crowded, very crowded. And the floor gave way.
Oh.
Yeah, the floor fell out.
People go
down.
Bottom.
Actually, you know what? I'm sorry I'm going on, but it was in the fall or in the winter because the house ended up getting condemned. And
for good reason.
Yeah, for good reason. And there's some problems when the floor falls out and lands on the pipes in the basement and whatnot. So they shut all the water down, shut the heat down. Well, some of the guys had water beds.
Oh,
and
no.
It was January.
Oh, no.
February. They went back a couple weeks later to collect some of their things or get, you know, the clock radio or whatever they left behind. And the water beds had frozen.
Solid.
Solid.
Did they burst?
Yeah, they busted open, and it was a crap.
Chad, did you have those issues at New Hampshire?
I had none of those issues.
That's so good. So one of the things that I want to get into a little bit here, Tom, and the first thing is the Wild just could not put the puck in the net. It looked to me like the Hawks were just straight packing it in. What can you do to get through that type of defensive zone posture?
Well, it's challenging if they've got the horsepower and the manpower to do it. And not only were they able to do that and clog that that scoring zone up. But they're, you know, they're adept puck handlers and puck carriers, and they had the skill and the experience and the patience. And then Corey Crawford turned his game up, too. So when there were some shots, we did. I mean, we had some breakaways, right? Mm-hmm. We had some breakaways. Don't think we scored on any of them. We probably had four or five in the four-game series, and maybe six, and we were unable to get past him. So the only thing you can do is you know, you have to kind of throw pucks through that traffic jam and get to the net with some bigger bodied and committed or determined guys. And you know, we maybe lack a couple of those guys, and especially when Stewart went out, you know, he hadn't generated a lot of offense. But in his defense, or maybe to his credit, we might have missed that part of his game if we would have had that at our accessible.
He generated space. You know, you used to hear in the 80s about he creates space for players around him, and that's definitely something he does, whether he's getting points or not.
Yeah, he is a big-bodied guy, and he wasn't afraid to go into traffic, that's for sure. And if anyone had, you know, any differences of opinion about it, he was also willing to step up and get in their face, which is a nice thing. And fighting is going by the wayside, and
absolutely,
no longer do we have guys that are just in the lineup to fight or in the lineup for entertainment. No, there used to be some guys that could play the game a little bit, mm-hmm, and could also fight, and Stewart probably falls into that. Then we went through a phase where there was just guys that were kind of in the lineup to intimidate.
But Matt Johnson.
Yeah, Matt Johnson, he couldn't play that well. And you know, the best guys in today's game can play and can fight. You know, a guy like Jerome Iginla, who people don't really want to mess with, and he's a seasoned veteran leadership guy. And even David Backes might fall into that category. You know, we don't have one on our team, so to speak, but Stewart is that guy. And you know what, to his credit, Brodziak would step up and fight when he had to. I don't think anyone's afraid of him, though.
To that point, you look at Kyle Brodziak, Sean Bergenheim, and Chris Stewart, Chad Graff on the phone with us as well. They're all unrestricted free agents. They all fit into that category. What's going to happen with those three players?
Well, I think that they're going to look into re-signing a few of them, but I don't think that the Wild can re-sign all of them.
Ryan Carter, too. I forgot about that one. Four guys.
There's a number of them. And a guy like Chris Stewart, you know, I know that some fans like his time, but he was losing a lot of puck battles before his injury, and I just don't know how well he fit with this team. And I'd be a little bit surprised if they re-signed Stewart. I think that Brodziak is a guy. He was making more money in his contract than he was probably than he probably should have for his production. So I think that they'd be willing to re-sign him, and I think that he'd be a very good player. Look, he was very good on what was the top-ranked penalty kill in the league. So I would not be surprised if they re-signed Kyle Brodziak.
Tom, he wins face-offs too.
Yeah, and he seems well liked by coaching staff, or certainly Mike Yeo. He was being probably paid at a higher rate than it warranted, but he also earned that paycheck, or he earned that salary, or he was awarded that salary, maybe is the better term, when there was a season 3 years ago when we had some injuries and he kind of stepped up his game and put some pucks in the net and was playing well. So that's a tough thing for players when they're making a little above their pay scale, and then you quickly criticize them. But yeah, for the money he's made lately, and I think he probably likes it here, he may be willing to take a pay cut to stay here, and I think some of those other guys would too. Ryan Carter might be another one of those guys in that conversation.
I think that would be a welcome situation. Now, that brings me to this question. By the way, Tom Chorsky in studio, producer David Helmer, Justin answering the phones that have been ringing off the hook, and of course on his way to Northrop Auditorium, Chad Graff. I'll start with you on this one, Chad. Sean Bergenheim and Chris Stewart were rentals or players that were brought in. Boy, is this segment already over?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to give you the question, and when we come back, you're going to answer this one. Can you stick with us through the break?
Sure.
Bergenheim and Stewart rental players, do you cut them loose, and were they worth giving up what you had to give up to get them for? Think about that one. We'll be back with more on the Ice Radio on Sports Radio 105, The Ticket. I have to be honest with you guys, one of my favorite movies is School of Rock.
Yeah,
when they kick this in on the end. I mean, I don't know, I did a lot of that. You know, Jack Black just breaks down every tune, the bass line, everything.
Yeah,
it's beautiful.
It is beautiful. It's something even the kids today can enjoy.
They still do. By the way, they had a reunion.
They did?
Yeah, they got everybody together 10 years later in 2014. It's on YouTube. Jack Black is about the same shape I am.
Just a big party, or what?
Well, they're playing. And Zach Mooneyham, remember the guitarist?
Yep.
Shredding. He's really good. I mean, he was actually a player when he was whatever he was, 10, 12 years old then, and not when he was up there with him. He was outworking Jack Black, who's a pretty good player. It was fun to watch.
They're probably working musicians today.
Tamika was there working the bellowing vocals. That's great. Turkey Sub, I think he called her. So, Chad, back to that original question I asked you about what the Wild gave up. I think you said off the air that it was a third-round pick for Sean Bergenheim and a second-round pick in 17 for Chris Stewart. Was that worth it?
In hindsight, I mean, they acquired Sean Bergenheim a little bit before Stewart. They acquired him about a week before the trade deadline. And in hindsight, I don't think when they traded for Sean Bergenheim, they knew that Chris Stewart was going to be available for a 2017 second-round pick. His price tag in the week leading to the trade deadline was higher than that. So I think that they realized that they didn't want to give up a first-round pick. They were hesitant about a second-round pick. So at the time, they said, look, we'll go for somebody else. We'll go for somebody who's of a little lesser value, but still a guy who could be serviceable and help us in the playoffs. And that was Sean Bergenheim, and that's what they decided there. But in hindsight, I don't think that they go after Bergenheim if they know that they can get Stewart. And based off of the way that things went, and Chris Stewart did, I think, a lot of good for them in the series against the Blues, even if his production wasn't there. But he was softer on the boards than I expected. He was a big guy, but he didn't always play like a big guy. So in hindsight, maybe you go after one of those guys. But by the end, the Wild had so much depth that Sean Bergenheim was a guy who was a healthy scratch and a guy that he gave up a third-round pick for, 10 games?
Ouch. So, Tom, I mean, like you said off the air, it's the unknown. You don't know, I mean, what you do moving forward.
Well, I mean, as far as what those draft picks will produce, let's assume that when they discovered that that Stewart was available, second-round pick in 17, let's assume that Chuck Fletcher thinks, okay, in 2017, we're going to be an improved team, we're going to be finishing higher up, and we're going to and our pick will be lower in the draft. And what the talent pool will be then is pretty hard to predict right now, although it seems to me that in general, more and more players that are really good, really skilled, because they've grown up in an era where they've been training younger and developing those skill sets, those hands, the skating, and they've been training and they're physically very fit, and so it seems like there's more and more good players and they're finding them. No longer you can't find the Pavel Datsyuks and the Henrik Zetterbergs like Detroit used to find. It seems like overseas, lower in the draft,
best
and
team in the league
at
doing that.
They totally steal them. But on the surface, it looks like, yeah, they may have paid up a little bit, and to, like Chad said, they didn't know Stewart was going to be available. Bergenheim didn't really maybe get a great chance either. He was a victim of circumstances of Stewart arriving and the Wild, paying up for him and him having a little more cachet, currently. Bergenheim, I think, is a pretty decent player. We just didn't get a chance to ever get settled. I mean, he got a chance. He played, didn't put up many numbers, but
that's a good point.
He had some playoff experience, and to spin it in the positive,
he was good,
they were saying
St. Louis.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
And to spin Bergenheim in the positive, they would say, look at his numbers in the playoffs. That was really why they went
out and got the guy.
They looked at it and they said, well, he hasn't done much, or he's kind of in on the lineup. He's a marginal or a fringe player, but look what he's done in the playoffs. If we need him, if someone goes down, or if he comes in the end of the season from the arrival to the end, he all of a sudden gets hot and we have a spot for him. But and Carter's in there and he got a chance to come in. So it was those lower four or five players, it was musical chairs.
Totally musical chairs. Chad, you got to bounce?
No, I'm on my way to this graduation, but I'm good for now.
Okay, got something for you here. Devin Dubnyk saying this is the best team he's ever been on.
I don't think we need anything. I think that this group in here, this was a special group, and it's one of the best teams I've ever played for. And that was a disappointing series, and we didn't come out on the right side of it. But I can't tell you one thing that needs to change. This is a group that's fully capable of winning, and you can play another four games. It could go the other way, and that's the way the playoffs are sometimes. But I still believe that this is one of the best groups in the league, no question. This has been the best group I've ever played with, and it's always disappointing when you lose a round and against, we feel like we could beat anybody, and we certainly felt that way coming into the season. So when you end up on the wrong side of a four-game sweep, like I said before, it just doesn't feel right. But I have no question in my mind that we're capable of beating that team with this group in here.
Well, I mean, hard to argue when you look at what they did from when his arrival on, Chad. It's hard to argue that that's not an untrue statement. I mean, from his world, he came from the Oilers and a Phoenix team that's rebuilding or kind of bottoming out right now. And then he comes to this team that just didn't lose when he was here.
And they were the best team in the NHL when he was here. And Devan Dubnyk was always good about giving credit to the Wild. He always said that this was one of the best teams he's ever played on. He was blown away, really, and I don't know if this is because of his previous experiences or because things didn't go well last year in Nashville or Montreal or Edmonton or, to an extent, Arizona. But he was always, you know, very good about saying that he was welcomed by this team, that the leadership was very good. That, you know, it can be a tough situation when you're acquired in the middle of the season, especially as a goalie, which, as is a lonesome position. The fact that he was welcomed the way that he was, and that was partly because of how well he was playing. But Devan Dubnyk was, you know, we talked about awards a little bit. He was the MVP of this team, and there's absolutely no question about that.
So, guys, we've got a couple of restricted free agents. Mikael Granlund gets re-signed, correct? They offer him. But what about Erik Haula?
Chad, what do you think about Erik Haula?
Ooh, look at him passing the torch. Chad?
Maybe he signed off.
He didn't want that question.
Okay.
What are your thoughts there?
You know, here's a guy that I like. I like his skill set and what he brings, and he was part of that penalty killing unit. And if he can get back on track and get rolling, I think they want him around. They're going to give him a very, very serious consideration. It seemed to me he got on the wrong side of Coach Yeo. He arrived and maybe had a little sense of entitlement that because he had played in the playoffs and did well in the playoffs, that he had a secure spot and didn't have to worry about it.
You got to earn that.
Yeah. And even if you come in and have a good playoffs, playing in the playoffs and playing a role in the playoffs is far different than arriving for, you know, training camp and standing on the edge of 82 games where you're not playing the same opponent.
And doing
five or
that,
six or seven
and doing
times.
Doing that every night.
Correct.
And every day, and it's your life.
And that's what people need to understand. You know, it's playoffs is challenging. It's intense. It's crazy, you know, over the top for a lot of reasons. But there are some things that make it a little easier, and that's playing the same opponent night after night. You get the book on them. You get to watch video after two or three games. You start to really recognize their tendencies and maybe their weaknesses and their strengths, and you adjust. And if you're the penalty-killing centerman, and that's going to be your main role, you slot into there, and you get your job done. And it's different when you're going to have to prove your worth or play a different game 82 times.
Chad, enjoy that graduation and your summer. I'm sure you got nothing to do but free agency drafts and sitting by the beach with umbrella drinks. A great show. I hope you're back with us next year.
I hope so, too. It was a fun year. We did this show from a number of different places in a number of different situations, but it was always good working with you, and it'll be a very interesting offseason for the Wild. I think that this is one of their more interesting offseasons that they've had. Especially in the Parisi Suter era, so it'll be a fun off season, and I'm sure we'll be in touch. It's fun doing this show, though.
Absolutely, have a great summer. We'll be in touch for sure. Chad Graff, thank you. Tom Chorsky, thanks for joining us in studio. Maybe you'll be part of the mix next year if you're willing.
I'm listening.
All right, buddy. David Helmer, great work. We'll be back at 11 o'clock with On Deck Radio. Gene Larkin in studio. Al Newman on the phone. So long, everybody.